Well, the cassowary, that magnificent bird of the tropics that sort of bolts from the undergrowth and across the road, is finding life as an endangered bird increasingly tough. So much so that the female population is asking quite a lot of its men.
Last year, one of the males was, in a sense, asked by the female to mate for a third time. And that would have meant half a year sitting on eggs. He refused and got a hiding for it.
Why life is hard for both cassowary sexes? In a moment. The Daintree Forest is millions of years old. It's home to some of the world's most spectacular and threatened animals, plants and birds, and it's heritage listed, which is why some landowners want pig dogs banned from getting in. It's a complicated problem, with thousands of feral pigs causing immeasurable damage to the rainforest. Pig dog owners are attracted to go there and try to fix the problem. But these dogs are also causing death and distress to the endangered southern cassowary. So people like Neil Hewitt, whose family has owned and run a business in the region for decades, wants pig dogs barred from boarding the Daintree Ferry. To get a look at what damage pigs do, Charlie McKillop went deep into the Daintree rainforest.
Wow. So this is a palm killed by a pig. So Alexander palm in these circumstances, but they do the fan palm much more enthusiastically.
They just knock them straight over.
They just eat into the centre of growth, the heart of the palm. So they've got no interest in the leaves or the stems or any other part, just that cylinder of highly nutrient material at the centre, what has been also known as the food of kings for the price of having to kill the palm. So you see through here, all the round through there is all just pig degradation.
Completely dug up.
It's like someone's come through with a rotary hoe.
Here we are on the banks of the Cooper Creek. It's a pretty special place, and it's your home.
It is. Cooper Creek flows off the centre of Thornton Peak, the mountain that tracks the highest rainfall in Australia, over 11 metres of rain a year, and through the oldest rainforest in the world, so it produces the perfect filtration system for this beautiful, clear water.
Neil Hewitt, you and your family have been residents of Cooper Creek for more than 28 years. What would you regard as the single biggest challenge to living here and being custodians of the world's oldest surviving rainforest?
I would say unequivocally the pig problem that we have. We have a terrible invasive pest problem with feral pigs that make up an estimated 60,000 strong population. And they fly in the face of all of our regulated World Heritage Management obligations. They're destructive, they're incredibly adaptable, they can bolster their nutritional requirements from sugarcane, they tear watercourses to pieces, they break up the integrity of the root structure that holds watercourses instead. They spend 12 hours of every day digging through the root mat of the landscape for earthworms, which make up the bulk of their diet. They kill fan palms, juvenile fan palms. They're doing this very systematically, so we're concerned that there won't be any successes. And while it might look like a magnificently healthy fan palm dominated rainforest, that's because there weren't pigs in Australia 1700 years ago to allow these fan palms to get to the size they are today. But we're seeing how systematically juvenile fan palms are being killed by pigs for the centre of growth, the heart of the palm. And there's nothing the palm can do to prevent that. It can't adapt away its way out of it because it's the juveniles that are being killed. So pigs would be my number one concern for our obligations as landholders within a World Heritage Area.
How would you regard the response of public landowners in this very special part of the world to that problem?
Australia has declared the feral pig a key threatening process under its Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act. It is therefore obligated under its own legislative requirements to implement a threat abatement plan. And to this end, its scientific advisory group has said at the outset that eradication is not an option, that we currently don't have the resources or the capabilities to deal with what is estimated to be a 24 million pig population nationwide. So at the very highest level of government, we have bailed out of tackling the responsibility in the way that we ought to have, in my opinion. I would have rather constrained that scientific advisory group to terms of reference that say that opting out because it's considered too difficult is not part of the remit of such a role. And if those particular people cannot see a way around it, then perhaps we need to be looking for people that aren't so timid. Australia has got to stop protecting pigs. And at the moment, what we're doing as a nation is partitioning the continental landscape into two classes, 70% of which has humans on and 30% which does not, divided through some 10,000 declared reserves, which is otherwise known as the protected area estate. Landholders in Australia, under state government legislative requirements, have to keep pigs off their property. They can be prosecuted if they're caught with a feral pig on their property. So for whatever capabilities Australian landholders are able to keep pigs off their 70% of the landscape, pushes them into the 30%, which is set aside for conservation, where a blanket of legislative protection says to those same law-abiding humans, you're not allowed to go in there and kill anything because it's a protected area. The very dedication of such a significant part of the continental landscape for protective purposes has become the greatest asset to the pigs, which, in my opinion, is the biggest environmental disaster this country has before it. Not many people think about pigs when their attention is directed towards the Great Barrier Reef, but pigs from the tip of Cape York right down to Bundaberg on the eastern side of the Great Dividing Range are digging up the landscape in their relentless search for worms. They need that protein to be able to survive. And every time there's a flooding event, all of that dislodged soil gets washed out onto the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Estate. So to have gone through that process just recently where Australia's World Heritage reputation was put at risk by a proposal for the Great Barrier Reef to be placed onto a list of World Heritage properties in danger, and to see the Federal Minister's response outlawing the dumping of any soil into the Marine Park Estate ever, and then flying over to the World Heritage Committee and dropping $8 million into the World Heritage Fund to demonstrate Australia's continued commitment to World Heritage, and to have that Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Estate taken off that interim list for a year, fails to take into account the quantity of runoff from soils caused by pig degradation right down the east coast of the entire length of the Great Barrier Reef. And I would think that the amount of soil pigs are responsible for dislodging onto the reef would far exceed anything that Abbott Point was ever proposing to dump.
Why don't we hear about feral pigs when we hear about threats to World Heritage values?
Well, as I said at the outset of this interview, the formality of the process has ruled through scientific expert opinion that there's nothing we can do about it, except to put strategies into play to try and protect endangered species. Well, in the Daintree rainforest, the cassowary is an endangered species under federal legislation, and its population is under tremendous stress, having to share finite habitat with 60,000 pigs. So I don't know what the actual loss of population size was to make space for those 60,000 pigs, but I'm absolutely confident that the only thing that we can do as a society to get the cassowary population back from the brink of extinction is to work within the finite habitat we have and ask ourselves, what can we take out that doesn't belong? Pigs, 60,000 pigs. And I believe that if we did that, then the cassowary population would bounce back very strongly, very quickly. And that should be all the arguments needed for Australia to fulfil its World Heritage responsibilities to the cassowary. But we don't do anything about trying to get rid of these 24 million pigs because they've fallen into the context of being too difficult a problem to deal with.
Here at Cooper Creek Wilderness, you do have a resident population of cassowaries. What have you been able to observe about the impacts on those cassowaries?
We've observed cassowaries breeding very well in the wild. We've watched them mating, we've watched them sitting on their nests, we've watched the chicks hatch out batch after batch. And every single one of them over the last 5 years has been taken down by predominantly dogs, pig dogs, that are brought into the area to hunt down this quarry. And it's a very popular recreational enthusiasm within landscapes of Australia where there are large pig populations. So, you know, you could see at a drive through Cairns and surrounding districts the number of vehicles with cages on the back for dogs that are bred for that very purpose, and they come into these World Heritage areas and release their dogs. The dogs don't know that they're breaking the law as they cross from a road reserve into a World Heritage area. And of course, the great casualty in this activity is the loss of cassery chicks. So this puts the cassery under a tremendous amount of stress because they're already on the brink of extinction with only an estimated 1,000 left in 9,000 square kilometres of habitat. But they breed again, okay? But every time a male cassery sits on eggs, we're looking at 8 weeks of incubation. The female protects the male, and so she's less able to fulfill her responsibilities to the processing of rainforest fruits through a digestive function and the movement across the landscape. The males, which are outnumber females by about 4 to 1, if they're sitting on nests more than once a year, then that takes another significant percent of the year away from the role of processing rainforest fruits. Last year, one of the males was, in a sense, asked by the female to mate for a third time. And that would have meant half a year sitting on eggs. He refused and got a hiding for it. But we're concerned that the casseries, whilst they're breeding very well in the wild, are not able to protect their chicks from pig dogs, which are here because of pigs.
How does it make you feel when you see some of those utes, as you've alluded to, with the cages on the back and the dogs armoured up, coming across the Daintree River? Some people might be quite surprised to know that that was even possible.
It is a grotesque picture of what the public impression would surely regard as the most heavily protected environment in the country, World Heritage. To think that casseries, which are at the very top of the rung in terms of dedicated environmental protection through endangered species status, could possibly be subject to such a recurring and savage evisceration from dogs. But there's no legislative impediment to prevent people with an enthusiasm for pig hunting coming across the ferry into an area that's renowned for its ecological values. It is legal for a dog to be taken into a World Heritage Area, but the dogs don't know that. Okay, and the resourcing going into managing public estate when there's 10,000 declared reserves making up 30% of the landscape of the country is so woefully inadequate that they can't possibly be managed to protect every one of them from these impacts. And in a place like the Daintree Rainforest, there's such a complex multitude of different tenures that it would be surprising, I think, to find any dedicated officer of the Crown that would know whether a dog can go here or there. It's a complex issue, but we do have a ferry as the most likely point of access into the area, and to me that would make the perfect mechanism to protect the area from the unwanted impacts of dog attacks. But unless the council, which has jurisdiction over that ferry, can be persuaded to make an ordinance that says no dogs across that ferry unless they're licensed as legitimate owners' dogs in the area, make that decision, then the pig dogs will keep on coming.
And that's Charlie MacKillop in the Daintree with Neil Hewitt. Well, at Manjimup, a small farming town 2.5 hours south of Perth, a couple says confusion over what really constitutes free range has seen their alternative method of egg production flourish. Charlie and Colleen Roberts have about 2,500 highline chickens on their 70-hectare property. By day, the chooks roam free in fenced-off sections of pasture and roost and lay their eggs in purpose-built mobile vans. The vans are rotated around the property, with the whole process helping to regenerate soil depleted by a former blue gum plantation. Now, the end product is called pastured eggs, and Anthony Pansia headed down to the farm for a look.
It took a little while for the market to respond, purely because we were pioneering in a new category of pastured eggs. Now we can't produce enough. The market is responded extremely well. It's recognised the quality, it's recognising the brand, and it's far beyond what we can produce.
And where are you selling them?
Mainly in Perth. There's some retail shops in Perth and the high-end cafes and restaurants in Perth that are looking for a quality egg that's produced sustainably and ethically.
You did mention there's a bit of a premium on the eggs. Could we get a rough idea of what it is?
It's variable depending on the shops and cafes, of course.
Who sets the price there?
We did.
Okay.
That's the beauty of pioneering in an industry. You do take the belting at the start to stand your ground and to create the category and your brand. And once you stand your ground and it is recognised, then you are able to set your price.
And insofar as getting turning the pastured egg into an official category, what sort of change would that make to the industry, do you think?
It gives the smaller farmers that wish to farm in a sustainable format, likes of ourselves, an opportunity to actually be recognised in a category and to be able to produce a product that is recognised for what it is on today's market. The way the egg industry is in the moment, everything's deregulated, so it's very difficult to have any format of or regulation or recognition of category until such time as the industry is brought back into regulation. If it ever happens, then that's when the category would be as a formatted, regulated category.
So, Colin, the actual end product is called a pastured egg, which refers to the fact, of course, these chickens are free to roam around the pasture. How does one actually qualify to be able to label the carton of eggs pastured eggs?
Well, it has to be in a mobile home and has to be continually moved around onto pastures. Stationary sheds certainly don't qualify, purely because it's not a sustainable form to be able to get a continual supply of fresh green pastures into the bird itself to produce the good quality egg.
And the actual egg itself, what can we, I mean, we'll go in and have a look soon, but can you see the difference? Can you taste the difference?
Absolutely. An egg's not just an egg, and this really proves how good a quality of an egg you can produce purely by moving it around onto fresh green pastures. The density of the egg's far greater, and it sits up really well in the pan, which is what it should do.
All right, well, I reckon we can walk in and have a quick look around. It looks fun, actually. I don't know why.
It is. Just, very therapeutic.
Well, yeah.
Now, they'll all come and be really noisy.
There's a lot of chickens. And they're all heading my way.
At your feet as well, so if you don't like it, we can go in the front.
Do you have an idea of how many eggs you'll get a day?
So within each trailer, we would get at least 450 eggs per day on each trailer.
Is there a pecking order within the chickens?
Excuse me, girls. I'm walking through a lot of chickens. Heading up to the caravan, which is on a bit of an incline. So what are we looking at here?
So they are all resting up at the moment. Obviously, they're all up on their perches. Once the egg is laid, it's on a slight slant, just enough for the egg to roll away. And the egg will roll away. It'll roll down into the belt in the middle. And therefore, it stays away from the chook. So she's not pecking at the egg. There's no poop on the egg. The eggs are completely clean. So when you go to collect the eggs, normally about 10, 11 o'clock, they've all pretty much finished laying for the day. You go into the front section of the caravan. This is where none of the chooks can bother you. You can collect your eggs in peace. And you basically just stand at the end where this conveyor belt goes through. You stand there, you wind your conveyor belt in, and then you stand there and collect your eggs.
These are Highlines, so they're a commercial, a close cousin to the Isa Brown. And in this trailer, we're running around 480 to 500 birds.
And how many of these have you got across this farm?
We have five that we run in rotation.
And the process of rotation then, how does that work?
We run the trailer and the chooks within that pen for a week. So we come in one side, we move every 2 days within that pen to spread the manure around and keep the ground fresh and keep the hygiene and health of the birds at its best. And then we move into the next pen, which is set up in front of them.
What's the thinking behind that then?
It's a double-edged sword. It's a good question there, Anthony. It's the health and hygiene of the birds. There's a lot of manure there, and you don't really want your birds spending too much time in that. And also, as fertilizer, you're getting a couple of hundred kilos of good nitrogen put onto your soil every day. So you want to be spreading it out as much as you can around the whole of the paddock to benefit for your pastures.
You're talking about how good it is to have the chickens running around on the paddocks. How have they changed the soil where you previously had blue gum?
We've just started on where the blue gums were initially. 18 months ago, they were harvested off. Last winter, we put in a cover crop of oats and barley, which was ploughed back in. This winter, we've done the same again, just trying to build up the soil before we actually sow down to good clover rye pastures. Running the chooks over the top of the cover crop has actually helped put nitrogen back in and help break down the organic matter, which is the barley and oats. So it's a double win.
I must say, they all look very healthy and, if I must say, happy, if that's at all possible.
I think they look very happy. I like it outside, so.
Yeah. All right.
That's Colleen Roberts there, ending that report from Anthony Pansier. And there you have it, an egg is not just an egg. Have a think about that when you're whipping up breakfast. That's a Country Breakfast for this week. Thanks to Kerry Dell for technical production. Now, did you know you can listen to us anytime by subscribing to our podcast or find us on the ABC's Radio Player app? I'm Edwina Farley. Stay with us on RN.
Discover the best of RN on Facebook. Simply search for ABC RN.